Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Today we're digging into the ballot questions of the 2018 South Dakota election by bringing you the information that helps you make up your own mind about how you want to vote on November 6th. Constitutional Amendment W looks to address campaign finance laws and lobbying laws. Here is the Attorney General explanation.
On November 6th, South Dakotans will vote on an amendment to lower campaign contribution amounts to candidates and political parties. It prohibits contributions to candidates or political parties by labor unions and corporations. The amendment expands the scope of activities requiring people to register as lobbyists and places additional restrictions on lobbyists. The amendment replaces the Government Accountability Board recently created by the legislature. The new board is granted broad power, including the power to investigate, adopt rules, issue advisory opinions, and conduct audits. It may impose sanctions, including fines, on any elected or appointed official, judge, or state or local government employee, and annually appropriate state funds to be solely administered by the board. The amendment limits the number of votes necessary for approval of an initiative or referendum to a simple majority. It requires the legislature to make specific factual findings when enacting laws that are not subject to referral. If the legislature wants to change the initiative or referendum process or a law passed by initiative, it must submit the changes to the voters. This multi-sectional amendment makes other additions to the Constitution and will likely be challenged on constitutional grounds. A vote yes will adopt the amendment, and a no will leave the Constitution as is.
He joins us to urge voters to say yes to Amendment W. Doug, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us in the Sioux Falls studio, David Owen. He's president of South Dakota Chamber of Commerce and Industry, and he is with us to urge you to say no to the amendment. Thanks for being here.
It's good to be here.
Doug, let's start with you and give us a little bit of background. I think in the last 2 hours we've kind of covered a lot of the context of this, but talk about Amendment W specifically, where it comes from, and then we'll break down what's included in it.
Sure. So Amendment W is really a response to the repeal of Initiated Measure 22 in two ways. It's a response to what the legislature did and what they failed to do. With regards to what they did, it's a response to the emergency repeal of a law that was not in effect but had been put on the ballot by the voters. And what they failed to do, it's a response to the kind of failure. We were promised replacements with regards to strengthening our ethics laws in South Dakota that really didn't materialize. After the end of the legislative session, we went around the state. We hosted forums with a lot of people who were out testifying in Pierre, going to Cracker Barrels. We wanted to hear, what did you want to do next? And then through those meetings came up with the ideas that became Amendment W. In broad strokes, it bans gift giving from lobbyists to legislators. It lessens the influence of money in politics, by setting some strict campaign finance limits. And it creates additional strict ethics rules and additionally an independent ethics watchdog to ensure that those rules are being followed, that they're not being broken in an independent, nonpartisan manner. That's kind of the response to the failure to put those provisions in place in the first place from lawmakers. But with regards to the initiative process, as the Attorney General's explanation explained, makes it so that in the future, if the voters pass a measure and lawmakers want to scrap it or undermine it, they can't do what they did to IM-22. They have to send that decision back to the voters for the final say, hopefully to cause more deliberation in what happens out in Pierre with the laws that we pass.
How would that work specifically? So something
passes, it
would be
just like a referendum.
Lawmakers say, this is not going to work, and then what?
It would be like the same way how normally we can go out and we can gather signatures and we can refer laws like we did with the youth minimum wage or Senate Bill 69 in 2016. It would just make that sort of a more automatic process so the burden is not on the shoulders of the citizens and rather on the shoulders of lawmakers who are making this decision.
David Owen, lots to dive in there with, but I want to give you a chance to join us first. Why oppose this? This is another attempt from voters. There are consequences to the emergency repeal of IM-22. Now voters are trying again with Constitutional Amendment W, and you're saying not so fast. How come?
Because this isn't, as Doug portrays it, this is an 8-page, 3,329-word amendment creating a fourth branch of government that operates outside the other three branches and independent and declares itself superior to everything else in the Constitution. They have created a non-elected tribunal and given them vast powers that no other ethics board has the ability with only 3 votes to issue subpoenas, do investigations, and most importantly, to pass rules without any constraint by a legislative process, by the governor, no checks and balances. It operates outside the other branches of government. It forces an expenditure of nearly $400,000 a year. The legislature can't do anything with that. The governor can't repeal it. And to go to the point Doug just made, it says even the rules of the initiative process have to go to a vote of the people. That's going to become paralysis, and we're not going to be able to keep the initiative process viable because all changes are going to have to take a statewide vote, which the amendment does by putting it in the Constitution.
When you say another branch of government with authority, you mean the Ethics Board, or who are you talking about specifically there?
It's interesting. The physical thing would be the Ethics Board, but the language says this article operates notwithstanding Article 2. Article 2 says the powers of the state are divided between the executive, legislative, and judicial branch. They make reference to judicial review, but it's meaningless because they also say in case of any conflict with any provision of this article, meaning the new article, and any other provision of the Constitution, the new article shall control. So this takes superiority and puts all of its rules through the Ethics Commission out of bounds and unchecked.
All right, so you're saying 8 pages. The Attorney General's explanation says 3 pages. How long is this thing?
I guess it depends on what sort of font you're looking
at.
Okay. I mean, if you blow it up to 32-point font, you can make things
we
as long as you want.
We can make it as small as you want.
12-point font.
Times New Roman.
Copied and pasted right off of their website.
All right, so this is one of the things that we've talked about during this program is this argument about, you know, something becomes complicated. It's easy to have consequences that people miss or unintended consequences. On the flip side, if you simplify it down to, you know, we just want to do this, you don't have the policy that you're really trying to affect. Talk a little bit about the complexity of this amendment and why it's drafted the way that it is.
Sure. I mean, like I mentioned, the content of Amendment W is something that came from conversations with volunteers around the state, the very volunteers who we were going to come ask to gather signatures, you know, not more than 2-3 months later. So that's why what's in Amendment W is what's in Amendment W. With regards to the length, the complexity, I mean, I know that when you hear it, you hear Initiated Measure 22 a lot when people are talking about that. And if you look at that, there's a lot of crossouts and underlines and references to this section or that section. Amendment W is not like that. We've actually been encouraging people to go on our website and read the measure itself. It's all very much self-contained. What you see is what you get. There aren't a lot of crossouts. There aren't a lot of underlines, just kind of plain text right there that is very kind of straightforward. I had a friend of mine say that you could brew a cup of coffee and sit down with a measure and you could finish reading through it before your coffee got cold. So that's one thing that we've been encouraging people to do. But with regards to the complexity, I mean, that's one of the reasons why we've undertaken almost 100 different educational sessions around the state since the end of 2017. We've talked at Rotary clubs. We've spoken at forums. We've spoken to high school students, college students, anybody who will listen. We've sat down to, you know, really just go through, answer questions. That's kind of been all that we've been doing since the end of the legislative session in 2017. It is really, really making it a voter sort of infused effort, and that's kind of been our guiding force.
Talk about, because there are, I think, 39 states who have an ethics commission that has authority over lawmakers. David, tell us what is the issue that ethics commission will have some authority, because it seems like many states have decided that that's an okay way to go, or is there something else at stake here?
Well, they've given this non-elected tribunal vast authority to pass rules and a list of areas of law to be involved with that no other state has granted, and this business of funding straight for the Constitution. Doug has an interesting criticism that when they created the Ethics Board, it is aimed at the executive. It doesn't apply to the legislative branch. That would be an easier solution than creating the tribunal that they are and funding it with $500,000. It's to put the legislature under that. That would have been something I think a lot of people would have supported. But let's be clear. they've gone out and they've talked to a lot of people, but they paid signature gatherers to do this. They're not a South Dakota organization filed with the Secretary of State. This is an effort funded by Represent US out of Massachusetts. They've hired two of the best. Doug's done a phenomenal job promoting this, and Mitch Richter is a registered lobbyist friend of ours. But this isn't a South Dakota effort. This is one that's been organized, funded from out of state, talking to South Dakota. We have a coalition of 40 groups that are where people work in the state, and we've done our best to educate them as well.
So let me push back on that just for a minute, because as we, you know, have the conversations on in the moment and have the candidates in, many candidates are saying they're hearing from, and I'm not disputing what you say about, you know, who's supporting the initiative, but certainly South Dakota voters are still upset about IM-22. And they still have, that is definitely a South Dakota effort, not that they all concur on what needs to be done about it, but would you agree that it's still something that feels like it needs to be addressed? You're just saying that it doesn't need to be addressed like this? Or do you think that the legislature did an effective job with the bipartisan committee of really putting forward compromises and agreements that would address some of those core issues of IM-22?
I think the legislature did a better job than they're given credit. I think there's changes that should be made. I understand there's frustration out there still. There's just frustration in this feeling that this whole process, I think more aimed at Washington than Pierre, but this whole process needs to be upended. They don't even, they didn't put IM-22 back on the ballot because a lot of IM-22 had publicly funded campaigns. They haven't touched that. So apparently part of the repeal made sense, even to them.
Let's talk about this issue that's easy to beat up on the state lawmakers, especially when you're living through a particular history and efforts are being made and, you know, summer studies happen. It's easy to say, hey, and Pierre, they don't have your best. I mean, it's easy to sort of scare people on one end or the other. Mm-hmm. Talk about that a little bit. Why not come about this in a different way with contacting your lawmakers, voting for a different candidate? How does this sort of grassroots effort fit into the other sort of democracy grassroots efforts that we all know and love?
Well, we haven't had a chance to vote for any new candidates since the repeal of IM-22, obviously. That was done very early in this current term. So voters will have that chance this election cycle to hold their elected officials accountable for that decision. But, I mean, the insinuation that this is something that is happening outside of South Dakota completely ignores the 180,000 South Dakotans who voted for IM-22, the 50,000 South Dakotans who signed petitions for Amendment W, and the hundreds of South Dakotans who came to forums, were out in Pierre testifying, were going to Cracker Barrels, were going to these interim task force meetings over the summer. We were utilizing every single avenue we could have. We were coming up with suggested changes to laws, but it was falling on deaf ears left and right. I mean, after the 2017 session, two of the bills that came out dealing with lobbyist gifts and with accountability, with regards to lobbyist gifts, the bill, House Bill 1074, came out with a glaring exception where things like food, alcohol, and entertainment aren't considered gifts under state law and don't need to be reported and can be given in unlimited amounts from a lobbyist to a legislator. That just kind of flies in the face of what the voters were really getting at in trying to clamp down on the influence that lobbyists have.
And what were some of the challenges with that? Because when folks went into session, they couldn't even accept a bowl of soup, you know, at a soup dinner. So what were some of the challenges of that lobbyist?
That was more geared at organizations that employ lobbyists rather than lobbyists specifically. That's one change with Amendment W is that it only applies to an individual lobbyist to a legislator. Organizations that employ lobbyists, you know, your local Chamber of Commerce, you know, your local interest group who's having a legislative appreciation day out in the Capitol, that's governed by state law. Amendment W just says if you're a lobbyist and you're a legislator, the relationship between you two should be informational only. There should not be any undue influence there with regards to gift giving, you know, steak dinners, whatever. I mean, pick up your own bill. You're there to serve the public. It's really kind of emphasizing that voters need to be kind of given the respect that we deserve that we haven't felt for a couple of years now, because it didn't begin with IM-22. I mean, this is the second election cycle in a row where we've had a measure that we pass on the ballot lawmakers come in and say, well, the voters don't know what they're doing, the voters don't get it, the voters don't understand, here, we'll take care of it for you. It's condescending, it's arrogant, and I don't blame people for being upset about that.
So in our remaining 10 minutes or so, which will fly by, one of my goals with this program was, at the end of this program, my mother is going to understand what happens if she votes. She's smart enough to figure out which way she wants to vote. She's smart enough not to get scared, to go and make an intelligent decision, but does she understand what's going to happen? So in our last 10 minutes, I hope we can get to what is exactly going to happen if you vote yes to this, so that folks like my mom, folks like every listener across the state can say, I've made up my mind. So Doug, let's start with you. Break it down for my mom in like three easy steps, and tell her what's going to happen if she votes for Amendment W.
All right, three easy steps. Here we go. The first step is a protected initiated measure process. The first step is this idea that when the voters go to vote, there's not going to be some backhanded backroom deal where the laws get scrapped that make our vote sort of feel meaningless. Voters will have a final say on changes to the laws that we pass and to the process that we use to put those laws there in the first place. The second is an increased strength of our ethics laws. Lowering contribution limits. We're one of 13 states where political action committees can donate unlimited sums of money to candidates, but individuals are limited. So it's kind of bringing those things into line, strengthening them, and then at the end of it, given us the means to know that our laws are being followed, that they're not being broken. And that's what this independent watchdog would be able to do, is enforce the laws that are written, do so in an open and a transparent manner so that everybody can know what is happening in state government, pull the curtain back, and make it a lot more transparent. And I'm sure we can speak a little bit more to what that process entails to clarify as well.
David, in a few steps, what's going to happen that you think maybe she doesn't want to vote for?
You're going to be creating a whole new article for the South Dakota Constitution, an article that claims to be and declares itself to be superior to all other provisions of the Constitution, creating an ethics tribunal that operates notwithstanding the other three parts of the government, and handing it great powers on a whole list of 8 sections of law to create rules only using a hearings process, no other check or balance, that will control every elected official and every public employee. So under their ability to control conflicts of interest, if they wanted to pass a rule that says you got to show your income tax records to be a public employee, there's nothing the legislature and there's nothing anybody can do but a statewide vote to overturn that decision. It's too much power in the hands of people, and it's going to put minutia like contribution limits in the Constitution. So if we want to change anything with the initiative process, like making the signature period longer, which Senator Nesbitt tried, that's going to have to go to a public vote. This thing is going to make our Constitution null and void to the purpose of a claimed transparency that's not going to be functional.
Doug addressed this idea, so I don't know exactly what district my mother lives in, but Senator Jim Boland's here. Let's say she lives in his district and she voted for him. She's trusting him to make some of these decisions in peer, and maybe she sends him back to peer. Why not rely on the represented, the people that we vote and we send to peer to do some of these things? Why have Amendment W?
When it comes to rules governing politicians, it's not usually wise to trust the watchman to write their own rules. Who watches the watchman? It's something that voters should have a say in, deserve a say in. And if that means that changes in the future have to be approved by the voters, I think that is a perfectly fine thing. Voters should have a say in changes to the initiative process, be them good or bad. Voters should have a say in changes to what ethical government means, be that good or bad, because at the end of the day, voters were the ones who are on the hook for any unethical behavior that takes place. Any money that's lost, any sort of malfeasance that occurs, that comes back on us at the end of the day. And so saying that we have a say and we have a direct say in what that looks like, I think is very important in today's political climate.
But I'm watching the campaign commercials on my television, and both Kristi Noem and Billy Sutton are running on platforms of increased transparency, mm-hmm. increased government ethics. Help is on the way?
Well, I think that is indicative of kind of against this idea that this is some out-of-state idea. Like, this is definitely something that everyone in South Dakota is talking about. It's something that all statewide candidates are mentioning, a lot of legislative candidates are mentioning as well. And yeah, it would be great to have more cops on the beat, but giving voters a chance to vote on very real policy, a very real change, rather than putting your trust in someone's word, you're putting your trust in something that you can tangibly sit down and read and piece through and listen to SDPB and learn more about. I think that that's very important with regards to democracy in South Dakota.
David, do you think with a new governor in office, whomever it may be, that you might see some of these changes coming forward?
We've debated transparency and open rules. The Dugard administration took many steps in that direction. They're about to create a process that's going to cost more about $400,000 a year every year, and that increases. They're about to ordain 7 members appointed by some politicians to oversee ethics by people who can make anonymous complaints. They can pass rules, issue subpoenas, and most interestingly, they have to declare their own conflicts of interest. They have to recuse themselves unless their vote is needed to resolve the matter. It's like they're taking away conflicts of interest from everyone else and reserving it for themselves because the conflicted board member can break a tie under the rules. This is poorly written. This is too risky. And this is an overdone answer.
Who watches the watchdogs?
I would like to respond to the powers of this board, definitely. It was mentioned that there are no checks and balances. It was mentioned that judicial review is somehow meaningless. No, everything that the board does, every rule it makes, every investigation it undertakes is subject to strict judicial review.
True.
The provision that you're referencing with regards to controlling in case of conflict, that applies to the measure itself, the governing aspect of it. But very specifically, it says in there, rules, investigation, subject to judicial review. And that doesn't just mean state constitution. That means U.S. Constitution. That's where you go to find your due process.
How does that work then?
That means you can't violate someone's due process over the course of an investigation.
So give me an example.
So
break it down.
The police department, if you got hauled into jail today, and you asked for a lawyer. That's your right. You asked for a lawyer. The police department, they could say no. It would be bad. It would be wrong. They can't actually do that. But in that moment, they can say no. But they won't because of the threat of judicial review. They know that your due process rights would be violated, and then the whole thing would be thrown out the window.
So this board is in place, and somebody calls with an anonymous tip. I think so-and-so is doing something dishonest. What happens?
Then the board can decide whether or not they want to investigate. They can issue subpoenas, which is something that, holy moly, I got the list in front of me of all the different states where they've got an ethics commission that can issue a subpoena. Arkansas, Mississippi. The board that was created by the legislature in 2017 even has the power to issue subpoenas.
What's the difference between that board and the board that we already have?
The board that we have right now, they can only oversee the executive branch, cannot oversee the legislative branch. They've got really no power to enforce the laws as they exist. There's no anonymous reporting. Everything is, you've got to stick your name on there at the end of the day.
I want to make sure, not to cut you off, because
sure.
I know we're not totally clear on all that, but I want to make sure we have time in our remaining 2 minutes to talk about the money, because David has mentioned a couple times, and there is an appropriations in this. That was a challenge with IM-22, for sure. So tell me, tell me about the appropriations.
The appropriation for IM-22, I think, was $12 million. $12 million. The appropriation here is $389,000. That's based on what states like. I know we've talked about Colorado a lot, but apparently they got a lot going on. Colorado's Ethics Commission operates with just about that much money as well, $389,000. There was some discussion, is it something that we have to require, or is it something that we can leave up to the legislature? But the legislature has shown, not once, but twice, that they are not to be trusted when it comes to ethics.
Where does the money come from?
It's just, it's not raising a tax or anything. It's just have to be compelling them to budget $389,000.
It's commanded by the Constitution.
The same way that we compel the legislature to fund a lot of things in government.
This is, according to the Attorney General's description, likely to be challenged on a constitutional basis.
Mm-hmm. I think that would have a lot to do with the fact that when last time voters passed an ethics act, lawmakers took it upon themselves to file a lawsuit against it. They didn't let it go to court. They repealed it before it could get to court, which kind of, to me, shows that it was passed up to the Supreme Court to be argued on merits, never made it there. It was rendered moot when IM-22 was repealed. But I think a lot of it would have to do that we've seen in the past that legislators do not have any really
bad. Just a minute left. Let's go ahead and 30 seconds. Final takeaway. David, your thoughts.
I have to use the 30 seconds to counter what he said about judicial
your
review
choice.
Because
yep.
when he uses the police, that's outside the purview. Within the purviews of this commission, if they pass a rule, there's no one that has standing. They have said conflicts with the Constitution, this rules. This is too expensive, too confusing, too outside the regular Constitution to warrant being passed by the voters.
Doug, 30 seconds to close.
I mean, to say that things here are unprecedented, I mean, the haphazard argument totally ignores the fact that being last in the country or near last in the country when it comes to accountability and transparency is a bad thing for South Dakota, but it's good in that we can look at what other states have done, what's worked in other states, what hasn't worked in other states. That's what went into play here, talking with voters and then seeing what we can do to make accountability more of a central issue in state government in South Dakota.